take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man.
Well, on the earth.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, March 4th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Boy, it is a perfect 420 type of time for me as well. I've gotten myself out of the city of Portland and off the road and up to my good friend and the sister from another mister that I never had, Cannabis Carrie. I'm up at her place here, Kensington Estates, as I like to call it, in beautiful Astoria, Oregon. We're on the mouth of the Columbia River where it meets the Pacific, the border between Washington and Oregon. We're on the northernmost tip of the Oregon coast, and it's a gray day, a typical gray winter coast day. But it's so relaxing up here in small town Astoria. You may know Astoria as the city for the Goonies. Unfortunately, the lady who owns the Goonies house has kind of now shut it down. There's so many tourists that would come in to check it out and kind of trash the area around it that she got tired of it. And, well, it's another sad day in Astoria when you can't go see the Goonies house. But you know, Goonies never say die. So who knows? Maybe that'll change someday. Coming up on today's show, we have got some great activism for you. Fran Janik is joining us at half past the hour. He's going to talk to us about Vermont and its attempts to legalize marijuana through its legislature. It's not the kind of legalization a lot of us would really prefer, but it is legislative movement on this issue. So Fran will tell us all about it, the good and the bad, coming up in a cannabis community chat at half past the hour. Also on the show today, we'll have time for me to get into a radical rant where I take a look at two competing medical marijuana initiatives in Ohio. Yeah, it's the running story. Wherever there's one initiative that's got funding and professionals and good poll numbers, there's always got to be another competing grassroots true legalization initiative to compete with it. So we'll break that down coming up at the end of the show in the Radical Rant. Also on the show today, we are going to take a look at the rumors that have proposed that drug abuse resistance education, DARE, has rescinded some of its previous reefer madness. Nothing could be further from the truth, and our friend Jacob Sullum writes in Forbes today on the topic. We'll cover that coming up in an activist agenda segment. Also, we'll go behind the headlines where the world-famous Cannabis Cafe, run by my friend and mentor Madeline Martinez in Portland, Oregon, has closed its doors for the third time. We'll tell you why, and we'll take a broader look at how the rights of legal cannabis consumers in three legal states are being denied, and that would be the rights of free assembly. We'll take a look at that up behind the headlines. But before we get to all of that, we've got the cannabis radio news for today, and in the headlines, we've got more on that situation in Maine where the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol failed to make the ballot because of one person's signature. We'll get the latest details on that. We've got three stories coming to you from Florida, the Florida State House, the County of Volusia, and the City of Tampa, all looking at marijuana law reforms. We've got some bad news coming out of my home state of Idaho, with respect to their medical petition. And in Orange County, some labor news with respect to a medical marijuana dispensary. That's all coming up on the Russ Belville Show. And in hour two, we'll take some more time to talk about marijuana issues and some politics. I don't know if you saw that Republican debate last night, but I did. And boy, that was some interesting pro wrestling theater, wasn't it? Stick around. We'll be back right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
From high atop Mount Soledad in San Diego, California, 100 feet above sea level. Good morning. It's Good News with cannabis nurse Heather.
This plant is amazing. Positive change is happening. We did it. No matter who you are, you can make a positive impact on the world.
I would rather be illegally alive than legally dead.
And that quote helped to give you strength.
Nurse Heather is only on CannabisRadio.com.
Good morning, cannabis nurse Heather.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Friday, March 4th, 2016. Maine officials have provided inconsistent accounts about whether they contacted a public notary before denying ballot access to a marijuana legalization initiative based solely on the belief that the notary's handwriting was inconsistent on forms containing 17,000 otherwise valid signatures. The various tellings of whether the notary was asked for an explanation come amid debate on whether they should have been contacted and whether the signature, which is required on petition forms, actually was inconsistent. The notary has not been publicly named by the state or the legalization campaign, but initiative campaign manager David Boyer says he knows the person and that the signatures looked consistent to him. The notary, he said, denies ever being contacted. On Friday, there was clarification to U.S. News that the state misspoke because they assumed the office followed its common practice of contacting notaries whenever there is an issue. The Florida House passed its second medical marijuana bill in 3 years Thursday. Legislators acknowledge that Representative Matt Gaetz's bill, HB 307, is not a panacea for all of the problems that have arisen the past 2 years, but that it does make significant progress. The bill, which passed with a 99-16 vote, expands the Right to Try Act, allowing near-death patients to use non-smokable marijuana of all strengths and doses. It also adds regulations for dispensing organizations, patients, and physicians covered by the 2014 Compassionate Medical Cannabis Act. The measure also comes as voters will consider a proposed constitutional amendment legalizing marijuana for medical purposes in November's general election. A similar measure was on the ballot in 2014 and received 58% approval, which was 2% shy of what was needed for passage. The Orlando Sentinel reports that the Volusia, Florida County Council voted on Thursday to give law officers the discretion to ticket people who possess 20 grams of marijuana or less. Under the new policy, violators would be fined $100 instead of being arrested and charged with a misdemeanor. County Council member Josh Wagner says that the war on drugs didn't work and that it only filled jails. He says officers will still have the right to arrest people if they become belligerent. The ordinance will apply only to possession. It will still be illegal to drive a car under the influence of marijuana. The ordinance will take effect April 1st and will cover unincorporated Volusia County, including their beaches. Tampa, Florida's city council voted 6-1 Thursday afternoon to give police the discretion to issue a civil fine instead of an arrest if someone is caught with less than 20 grams of cannabis. The only no vote was from Councilman Charlie Miranda, who is worried that much of the city's crime is because of drug deals gone bad. If this ordinance passes second reading, possession of less than 20 grams of pot or drug paraphernalia will be a first-time fine of $75. It increases for each additional citation up to a maximum of $450. St. Petersburg is also considering a marijuana decriminalization ordinance. The final Tampa City Council vote will be on March 17th. Volunteers with the group New Approach Idaho have spent several months gathering signatures to put medical marijuana legalization on the ballot in November. Now, with less than 2 months until the deadline, the group's president has canceled the petition. Bill Espenson says he received a letter from a national pediatric organization that had been listed on the petition as supporters of medical marijuana. The group asked that its name be removed. Espenson says New Approach leadership had considered pulling the petition anyway because it wasn't written well enough. Espenson says New Approach could change the petition and refile it this year, but the group was not going to get enough signatures anyway, though he says they'd gathered more than any previous pot petition in Idaho. Espenson says his group will start over with an effort to get medical marijuana legalization on the state's 2018 November ballot. Orange County, California's first licensed medical marijuana dispensary made history again, now being the first store of its kind to join a labor union. South Coast Safe Access at 1900 Warner Avenue in Santa Ana signed a labor contract with its nearly two dozen workers. Owners agreed to give their employees an hourly wage starting at $13.50, health benefits, paid vacation, and pension contributions. The workers there are now members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 324. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Friday, March 4th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
With over 6 years of experience in the industry, New Era CPAs is one of the nation's leading cannabis accounting firms, helping hundreds of growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies with their tax, legal, and business strategies. New Era CPAs offices cover the West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, and their skilled team is always available to help you take your business to the next level. Visit NewEraCPAs.com for more info and set up a consultation. Welcome to the New Era.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we take aim at a rumor that's going across the internet amongst many pro-marijuana websites about drug abuse resistance education. That would be the DARE program that has cops lie to kids about drugs in our schools. But that the DARE program has suddenly reversed itself or is no longer considering marijuana to be a gateway drug. This has been repeated on numerous websites. Let's see if the first one here, a letter to the editor in the Columbus Dispatch, which was purchasing marijuana puts kids at risk. And it was a Leap speaker who had written this article. He's actually been on our show, Carlos McDermott. And he was a deputy sheriff who said that the war on drugs was a failure and that we needed to end prohibition. That was mistakenly placed on DARE's website, thinking that it was an anti-legalization article, and that was when DARE first was called on this as to whether or not they'd change their position. Regional Director of DARE, Ron Brogan, said, "The article you wrote about was mistakenly posted on our website by a service we use. We have not changed our stance of being opposed to the legalization of marijuana." But now there's this meme going around that DARE no longer considers marijuana a gateway drug. DARE has issued another correction saying, quote, "Some pro-drug websites are promulgating misinformation claiming Drug Abuse Resistance Education Program, DARE, one of the largest anti-drug groups in the world, no longer lists marijuana as a so-called gateway drug. Had nominal research been conducted by the authors, substantial references on the DARE website would have been found in support of DARE's position that marijuana is both an illegal and harmful drug to the youth of this nation. The authors would have had justification to instead state, DARE considers marijuana to be a dangerous drug for youth and of the United States and the world," end quote. Well, I take exception to a couple things here. Number one, nobody is pro-drug on these websites. Well, I shouldn't say that. Some people are very pro-cannabis, but generally we're anti-prohibition is what we're talking about. It's not whether the drug itself is good or bad. It's whether or not prohibiting it and putting criminals in charge of its distribution and production is a good idea, which we think it is not. And the other thing is saying that they no longer list marijuana as a gateway drug and then going forth and saying we say it's illegal and harmful doesn't exactly answer the question as whether or not they still think marijuana is a gateway drug. It depends on what they consider to be references to this on their website. Jacob did a good job of looking through the website, and I've looked through the DARE website many times myself, and you may find parts where they'll state people that have heroin addiction might have started first on marijuana. But they don't explicitly go out and say that there's a gateway. They let that implication be drawn, that inference be drawn by the listener, by the reader. They don't come right out and say it. And as an observation, it's true. It's true that people that use heroin, a large majority of them, had tried marijuana. It doesn't mean the marijuana made them move to heroin. It's just a true observation. Just like you can observe that most of the people who have tried marijuana tried alcohol first. Doesn't mean one led to the other. It's just kind of part of the natural progression of how people might use certain substances. Regardless, DARE is saying, no, they are not dropping that part. The part that had changed was, according to Frank Pagueros, DARE's America's president and CEO, says it's based on what appears to have been a partial posting of a document on our website. The part that was posted and since removed discussed alcohol and tobacco as gateway drugs. The part discussing marijuana as a gateway drug was on a subsequent page that was not posted. So it makes it seem like alcohol, they're going out of their way to say alcohol and tobacco are gateway drugs. And since they didn't mention marijuana, they no longer consider marijuana to be a gateway drug. That's some specious logic as well. Just because they didn't say they're against it as a gateway drug doesn't mean they don't feel that way and they haven't said so. It's just they didn't put it on their website in that way. Absence of the evidence is not the evidence itself. So DARE is still anti-marijuana. There was numerous articles on this. There was a Reddit thread, marijuana no longer a gateway drug. Teen Vogue said picked up on this. Leafly picked up on this. And that was where DARE's Ron Brogan seemed quite confused as to why all these outlets were saying that DARE had dropped its gateway drug references. Nothing could be further from the truth. They still believe that marijuana is a terrible, terrible thing. And they just say that there's no point in saying whether it's a gateway drug or not, because they say, quote, "Within our curriculum, we don't deal with gateway drugs. We deal with drugs, period." So trying to distance themselves from any sort of gateway reference. And Canna Chronicle and other websites continued to do this. There's been a great debunk of this by Jacob Sullum. Look it up on Forbes.com if you'd like to know more about this. But rest assured, folks, DARE is still as anti-marijuana as they've always been.
might have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dog.
Well, folks, that sound means that it's 20 after, and that means it's 4:20 in Denver, Colorado, and the rest of the Mountain Time Zone. But it's always 4:20 here on CannabisRadio.com and the Russ Belville Show. I'm going to enjoy myself a nice drag off of a joint here in beautiful Grass, Astoria, Oregon, home of the Goonies, Never Say Die. We'll be back with a discussion of the Cannabis Cafe when we return.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking the Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestle trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Welcome back today. We're just going to talk to myself here in today's activist agenda because I got some problems with what's going on in my own hometown of Portland, Oregon. On Wednesday, the legislature unanimously banned drive-through dispensaries or walk-up windows for dispensaries. Unanimously banned them. And I have to wonder why. What is it about marijuana that makes it safer if I have to get out of my car to walk into a building to purchase it? McDonald's drive-thru isn't bad for you because you're driving through for it. It's just bad for you. Likewise, cannabis isn't any safer or more dangerous because you're picking it up at a walk-up window or you're driving through to get it. This presumes that the people who are driving up through the dispensary window are picking up the marijuana and then smoking and driving. Why wouldn't that be any more difficult or easy if you had to park the car first and then get back in the car? So these proactive bans on certain types of cannabis businesses and certain ways of serving the consumer sector seem to me to be solutions in search of a problem. What would have the problem been of having drive-up dispensaries? They've got drive-through liquor stores in places in this country, a lot of them throughout the South, but we're going to worry about someone picking up some cannabis at a drive-through. And this comes on the heels of the state of Oregon passing and amending its Clean Air Act to ban vaporization and any sort of cannabis smoking. And this has led now to the closure for the third time of the world-famous Cannabis Cafe, run by my friend and mentor, Madeline Martinez, in Portland. It's made international headlines for being one of the first places where cannabis consumers could gather and consume cannabis together, just like alcohol consumers can. But it's been shut down because the clean air laws do not allow indoor smoking. They've made numerous visits and found, yes, indeed, Madeline was allowing people to smoke joints inside, and ashtrays and everything. So she's been shut down, or she's shutting down. And it just begs the question, why? Because this Clean Air Act actually has within it specific exceptions carved out for tobacco shops and cigar bars. And Representative Ann Leninger said, quote, "I think the idea of cannabis cafes makes sense, especially if we allow cigar bars. But the concerns of public health advocates are real. We need to make sure that if we allow the creation of cannabis cafes, we do it in a way that is safe for workers and that is going to require some careful thought and discussion among people who care about the issue," end quote. Look, the Clean Air Act and all of these laws about no smoking indoors were passed because we had demonstrable science showing there was a harm from the inhalation of secondhand smoke on a continuous basis by the workers. There is nothing about cannabis smoke that is any more harmful than secondhand tobacco smoke, and certainly less harmful than secondhand tobacco smoke. Again, solutions in search of a problem. And if we're going to allow cigar bars that have that tobacco smoke that the Clean Air Act was invented for, we're going to allow that, then we have to allow cannabis cafes. And of course, the unintended consequences we've mentioned numerous times on this show. Without a place to go consume cannabis, two things happen. Number one, tourists and residents who live in public housing and places where their landlords don't like it, who want to smoke or vaporize cannabis, do so anyway. They just do it in parking lots. They do it around the corner. They do it in the alley. They do it in the park. They do it wherever they want to do it. So you increase your public consumption. Or number two, unable to smoke anywhere, people then turn to edibles, which they have very little experience with. They end up overdosing on the edibles, going to emergency rooms, and then there's this hue and cry from the officials about, oh my God, there's so many more people going to emergency rooms for medical marijuana or for marijuana. Well, yeah, of course, you're forcing them to. You're incentivizing a more difficult manner to control when it comes to consuming cannabis. And then, of course, all of this is also in the context now of High Times and the Cannabis Cup being unable to secure a location for the 420 Stoner holiday in Colorado, not being able to get an event permit in Denver, scrambling to try to get an event permit in faraway Pueblo, Colorado, and now it doesn't look like there'll be any Cannabis Cup in Colorado. What the hell's going on with legalization when there can't be a Cannabis Cup in Denver, Colorado, Seattle, Washington, and Portland, Oregon, the three places in the world on the planet that should have the most liberal cannabis laws that would allow for a cannabis cup, cannot hold one any longer? What the hell is going on when in legal states you can't have these gatherings for cannabis consumers to celebrate their right of free association, but in California and Michigan, people that have medical permission slips can do exactly the same thing? As we legalize cannabis, it's important for these officials to understand and for us to educate them on the fact that this isn't just about whether or not we're safe from being arrested because we're cannabis consumers. It has to do with whether or not we are treated differently because we are cannabis consumers. The arrests and the fines were just part of it. The whole point is that we should be legal, and legal should mean equal, and equal to the people who drink alcohol and smoke tobacco and seem to have all sorts of rights, privileges, and exceptions carved out for them. It's time for equal rights for cannabis consumers. It's time for cannabis cafes, for drive-through dispensaries, for cannabis cups and other sorts of sanctioned adult events, just like are allowed for alcohol. All right, folks, we got to take a break here, live from Astoria, Oregon. Never say die. When we come back, we'll get Fran Janik on the line. He'll tell us all about Vermont's legalization going through its legislature, not an initiative, and how that's becoming more and more restrictive and corporate. That's coming up in the Cannabis Community Chat right after these messages.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too. The cannabis community is a diverse set of people from all walks of life. Conservative and liberal, black and white, straight and gay, rich and poor, and everyone in between. Learn more about the people we are freeing from adult cannabis prohibition in our Cannabis Community Chat.
Welcome back, everybody. 31 after the hour, and today in the Cannabis Community Chat, we're going to go to the great northeastern regions of the United States, to the state of Vermont, the home state of Senator Bernie Sanders, and our guest for today, Fran Janik, who's a longtime listener of the show and an activist in the, the Green Mountain State? Welcome, Fran. How you doing?
It is the Green Mountain State. Hey, Russ. Good to talk to you again. I'm here representing a group of concerned citizens known as Vermont Homegrown, of course. We helped craft the original bill in the Senate with Senators White and Benning sponsoring it, coming out of the GovOps Committee. I will reflect on what's going on in your own state and say what the heck is happening, because what has happened is, as it went through the Judiciary Committee and Senator Dick Sears took hold of it, he basically rewrote the entire bill. Mm. So this has gone along to the point where he was only willing to legalize up to 1 ounce of marijuana in possession of an individual. And he basically focused, like I said, going corporate, but focused the limited number of permits on more expensive and higher-end businesses.
Where did we start off with this bill? What was the possession limit when it started, and did it have cultivation?
Well, we had a really nice bill. I'm holding in my hands a document that I hand-titled S-241, and that was issued by the state of Vermont and introduced by Senator White and referred committee on 12-10-2015 at 4:03 p.m. And that basically allowed for home grow. It allowed for you to possess up to an ounce on your person. It allowed for you to keep everything that you grew in your home or secure location. It allowed for sharing without any sales. And we worked to get open licensing, but in that particular version of the bill, that draft, we came out with about 171 licenses.
So really, not too dissimilar from what we've seen pass in other legal states, and the sky hasn't fallen.
Right. Well, this is what we tried for. In other words, we tried to keep it to civil penalties, not criminal penalties. Right now, we're back to criminal penalties for any grower that is not licensed by the state. And that's a very big problem. This bill will also leave out people who cannot get a card in our very restrictive medical program. Remember, the reason that we were working very hard on this legislation to get it to be open, an open market and open licensing and home grow, is to allow people that are not allowed into this restrictive program to gain access to cannabis. We've been dealing with this legislation that is the medical program for about a decade, and it's been very difficult to change. So the idea of doing something through the legislature, which is, and we found out is very difficult, a ship to steer, has become a situation where we were forced to go against our own bill, regrettably. At this time, we're trying to get amendments as it goes through the House, as it has cleared the Senate. Our own Senator Balint from Windham County stood her ground and represented her constituents very well. Joe Benning spoke eloquently, and they passed it through Judiciary on the premise that anything is to get it through there is better than nothing moving in the direction that it's going, but we really feel that we need to take it further.
So the situation is then you had a pretty decent bill, had home grow in it, but this senator kind of insisted that it have no home grow, that only commercial licensed grow would be allowed. People, patients,
I suppose. He didn't, yeah.
would have to buy it from a dispensary, right? Or a pot shop.
Anybody in the state will have to buy from state licensed marijuana.
Okay.
You will not be able to grow your own. You will not be able to, there's nobody bringing it into the state. We have gotten it down a bit. The initial licenses were, I believe, 10 or 15 licenses. We've extended that and we've lowered the threshold. But to give you an idea, the initial application fee, which I'm not sure if it has changed or it hasn't, but I don't think it has, is a non-refundable $15,000 to get a license.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, and they've taken away, you were talking about places for people to smoke, and they've taken away the lounges that were in the original S-241 that Senator Benning actually put in just to give tourists a place to smoke their quarter of an ounce. Mm. So we're looking at a 25% tax plus possibly the 6-7% sales and use tax on top of that on every sale. And so it basically they've created a system also that funds law enforcement for drug enforcement. 25% of the profits from legal sales will go to law enforcement directly, and then another 50% of every civil fine collected for any arrests and fines will go directly to the law enforcement community.
Wow. So a little bit of incentive there to find ways to entrap and to prosecute people for profit, which is something we're trying to get away with or get away from in the first place. We're speaking with Fran Janik. He's an activist in Vermont who is working with what was the name of the group again?
Vermont Homegrown. That's Vermont Homegrown, and we're a community group of concerned citizens who have been in on all the meetings during the last year.
A little Vermont Homegrown there for you.
Yes. Oh, did you play it? Okay, I couldn't quite hear over the line.
Yeah, there we go. Home Seat Grown. Tell folks a little bit about your program that you do regularly if they want to listen in more on what's going on in Vermont.
Well, we don't have a website. Again, we're operating on zero budget. You know about that.
Oh, yeah.
And so we have a Facebook page, and you just go to Facebook, and you dial in Vermont Homegrown, all caps, three words.
Okay.
And you'll get our Facebook page, and that'll give you a feed to what's happening. And, you know, another comparison right now is we just had a maple spirits distillery, a small one, husband and wife team, just get featured in WCAX, which is one of our TV stations here. And they're able to go farm to table with their spirits, with their alcohol, made from maple syrup. And I have no problem with that. But if we are celebrating all these things in Vermont, why can't we celebrate one more?
Yeah.
Why can't we go farm to table? Why can't we spread out the wealth? Why can't we keep the money local? It's not old. It's not new money in this economy. It's old money that many of Vermonters, small illegal growers, have stood up right in front of their senators and said, "Please don't take away my small income that I get from this." And again, if you take away home grow, even for the person that's not selling, somebody just wants to have it for themselves, one or two plants, or as we had it, a 10-by-10 plot, which seems to have scared some senators. Are, again, taking that money that could go other places in the economy, and that person is going to have to spend for that $400 ounce, because it's not going to be a $250 ounce. So the black market is still, it's not been taken away, or the gray market, or parallel market, or whatever you want to call it, is not going to leave. And we're going to create a two-tier system where you can be arrested because you don't have a license, we're not going to give you one, and the other fellow that's got a lot of money or has investors can get that license and then own the market.
So is it the situation where the proponents of the bill in the legislature, you mentioned something about them, let's get this passed to get it out of committee so there's some movement, but do they believe that in the House they're going to be able to re-amend it to return home grow and maybe some of these other provisions, or does that seem unlikely?
Well, I do have information that there is action in the House from several members, from several state representatives to amend the bill to put home grow back in. We're not sure what's going to happen there, of course. We won't know until it happens. But there is concern among the House members because we've raised the issues that, in fact, legalization won't work for the 5 points that the governor's put out, which includes elimination of a black market, and that indeed will cause problems where we'll have additional judiciary costs, because if you bring in the 25 police officers that are funded in the bill, and it's actually pre-funded by over $1 million. I forget the exact figure, so I won't go any higher than that. But, you know, it's just a situation where Senator Dick Sears, Richard Sears of Bennington, Vermont, who's the head of the Judiciary Committee, who's a senior senator in Vermont, decided he was going to do it his way, fund law enforcement, and give the money to, you know, we don't mind them giving the money to prevention or that kind of thing. Of course, nobody's looking for anyone under the age of 21 to have legal access. But again, we feel that will actually be, their legal access could be diminished by, you know, just bringing it out in the open and allowing people to go farm to table. We've had one of our farmers up there in a meeting, and they questioned her extensively, and she's a nice young lady, family farm with meats and vegetables, and she sells to local consumers, and you know, and they want to test, they want you to bring your herb to the testing center and make sure you go through our expensive testing, and then or it has to be grown by the state sanctioned places. So it's containment and control basically is a good part of the issue too.
If this bill survives as is and is unable to be amended for any of these things like the home grow or the pot lounges that we'd like to see in it, do you feel that it's too compromised to be worth supporting, and perhaps advocates should change their attitude toward passing an initiative that might be more liberal?
Well, we've been chastised for even thinking that and saying that, but if we hadn't raised the flag, I think we'd be in worse shape than we are. And another point of that I'd make up is if this bill passes right now, a Vermont registered patient will not be able to make a full extraction oil or an RSO. And so people won't be able to make their meds. So these people that were making their meds who could barely afford to grow their own because they can't afford to go to the dispensaries, or because the two licensees that own 60% of the dispensary market here, CBD and Southern Vermont Wellness, don't even make those meds for cancer patients. And patients find out after they sign up.
Is this a restriction on extraction techniques that would cause this?
Yeah. You wouldn't be able to use any ethanol or anything, or butane, of course, or anything like that. And already they're cracking down on people here in the state. There was a child who was interviewed and found out that his father was growing and he was making extracts, but the mother had cancer and she just didn't have a card. And that's the other side of the coin too, is doctors will not confirm diagnoses, and that's all they're doing on the Vermont forums. But there are many, many, many medical professionals who are refusing to confirm diagnoses. And then the whole system is set up. Like I said, we're trying to avoid the restrictive legislation that has really destroyed the medical program in Vermont. It's a D+ on the AMA, and I don't know how accurate that is, but I'd give it a lower mark. So
yeah.
It's left so many people out in the cold. Maybe 2/3 of the people that could benefit from this can't even get a card. And I hear from them every day. I heard from a veteran who moved from Pennsylvania, and he had some of the best, he has MS, multiple sclerosis, and he had some of the best MS doctors in Pennsylvania. Evidently, they're down there in Philadelphia. They're great. And he came up here to get legal medicine. And right now, it's going to take 6 months for him to get a relationship an appointment with a doctor. And then it is required that he have a 6-month relationship after that appointment to get his card. So there's a year wait for him right now.
My goodness.
I have him walking around the state house with letters to senators.
Yeah.
Okay. And I could go on. A number of patients continue to contact me.
Them that contact information because we're running out of time here, Fran. If people want to talk to you about this and other issues in Vermont, how can they reach you?
They can go to Vermont Homegrown on Facebook, and they can leave us a message. I'm one of the administrators. There's several administrators, but I'm one of the primary administrators. Vermont Homegrown on Facebook, and that's the best way to get to us right now. Call if you're in Vermont and you think you want fair legalization for all Vermonters, please call your senators, please call your House rep right now too, and tell them what you want, because we want it for everybody. We just don't want it limited to a few, and we don't want a two-tier system that leaves people being arrested for growing a couple of plants at home.
Fran Janik, thanks for all the work you're doing and all the support you've given us here at the Russ Belville Show, and good luck with everything happening in Vermont.
Thanks for everything, Russ. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Stay tuned, folks. We've got time for a radical rant coming up at the end here. We're going to look at competing medical marijuana initiatives in Ohio.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Well, of course, there are two medical marijuana initiatives for Ohio. What did you expect, people? A couple of weeks ago, the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP, announced the details of their planned medical marijuana initiative for the state of Ohio. You'll remember that the Buckeye State had infamously rejected legalizing recreational and medical marijuana last year because Nick Lachey might get rich. But within that electoral drubbing was the polling information that showed overwhelming support for medical marijuana. MPP's initiative is largely a cut and paste from some of their better medical marijuana laws that they've been successful in passing throughout America. There are a couple of stinkers in there from some of their lesser medical marijuana laws as well. Here are the basic details of MPP's Ohio initiative. Patients would qualify for a medical card with any of the big eight conditions that most states recognize. Those are cancer, glaucoma, HIV, AIDS, cachexia, seizures, spasms, pain, and nausea. Most all medical marijuana states recognize those, as well as PTSD, agitation from Alzheimer's, ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, Hep C, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis. Registered cardholders in Ohio could possess 2.5 ounces of usable marijuana, could cultivate or have a caregiver cultivate for them at least 6 cannabis plants, and that's just the floor. The ceiling could be raised. There could be a greater limit in some circumstances. And patients could possess all the usable marijuana they harvest from those 6 plants at the grow site. There will be other limits eventually for cannabis products like edibles and extracts. They're not listed in the initiative, but the state is directed to come up with some limits. There are some limits on the caregivers. Only one caregiver can grow at any one address. That's to avoid the problem of card stacking like what we had in Oregon, where like 26 growers all grow on one property. The caregiver has to be an Ohio resident, so people just can't move in from out of state and be caregivers that are growing for patients. And caregivers can only grow for 5 patients, with one exception. If you're a caregiver who's an employee of like a hospice or a nursing home, assisted living facility, something like that, then you can be a caregiver for more than 5 patients if they're all residents of that facility. The registry cards would only cost $40 a year. That would be the max. And there could be lower cost cards for low income patients. This is all details from Ohio's proposed medical marijuana initiative from MPP. They would have reciprocity for medical marijuana cards issued from other states. So your medical marijuana card would be valid in Ohio. And until they get around to the registry cards being issued, which I think is like August of 2017, up until then, patients would have an affirmative defense to any marijuana charges until just as soon as the law goes into effect. Medical cardholders could not be denied any right or privilege for medical cannabis use and could not be discriminated against for their housing, their education, their child custody, and their medical procedures, such as organ and tissue transplants. Now, there's some caveats on that. Housing and education, they can restrict patients if they lose some sort of federal benefit. If they lose a federal contract or something, they can't be forced to have to allow patients. Nursing homes and hospices have to allow some sort of patient access to medical cannabis, not necessarily smoked. They can ban smoking. They can ban, you know, they can say that the patient can't keep their medicine on site, but they have to at least let a patient have edibles or tinctures delivered to them in a non-smoked form, and they can use them on site. There would be specific protection from search and seizure solely for being a cardholder. And being a cardholder is specifically mentioned as not any sort of probable cause or reasonable suspicion for police to investigate a crime. There would be a new marijuana control division that would be established. It would set the rules on safety, packaging, labeling, inspection, testing, marketing, and advertising of medical cannabis. They'll control the licensing of the medical cannabis industry, and licensing would be preferred for those who provide medicine to financially needy patients and to those that promote investment in communities of color. There would be up to 15 type 1 growers. A type 1 grower would be able to cultivate up to 25,000 square foot of canopy, and that fee would be $500,000 for the big grows. Up to 15 big grows, $500,000 license each. And there could be an unspecified number of type 2 growers. They only have to pay a $5,000 fee, and they can cultivate only up to 5,000 square feet. So that sounds like it would help to protect the small grower industry in Ohio. The rest of the licenses for production, testing, production they mean processing, testing, distribution, you know, wholesaling, and dispensaries or retailing, those types of licenses would all also cost $5,000. Cardholders could not process their own hydrocarbon or carbon dioxide extracts without a commercial processor's license. And dispensaries would have to maintain internal confidential tracking of patient purchases to ensure that the dispensaries don't sell them any more than the 2.5 ounces they're allowed to over a 2-week period. And as far as the licenses, you can be vertically integrated. You can own a cultivation, production, distribution, and dispensary license. You can control it from farm to table, from seed to sale. The only thing that's restricted is if you have a testing license, you can't have any of those other licenses. Testers can only be testers. And cultivators can only have one cultivation license. So if you're wondering why the guys would go for the type 1 license at $500,000 when they could just get 5 type 2 licenses at $5,000 each, no, they can't. So if you're a big grower, that's it. You got your one big grower license. If you're a small grower, that's it. You got your one small grower license. There's a residency requirement. You have to be an Ohio resident from before January 1st, 2016. But the residency requirement sunsets in 2020. So for 4 years, only Ohioans will be able to get these licenses. Licensees can't generally have felony convictions within the past 5 years. It's generally no violent felony convictions. And it's kind of this vague thing about no convictions for actions that would affect, you know, the lawful running of a dispensary. So I guess, you know, fraud, embezzlement, those kind of things. But definitely no violent felony convictions. And that's only within the past 5 years. And it wouldn't count any felony conviction for something that would be made legal under the medical marijuana law. So if you were growing up to a, you know, 25,000 square foot grow, maybe that wouldn't be a problem under this new law. Licensees cannot co-locate with a doctor who writes recommendations for medical cannabis. Can't co-locate, can't pay, can't give benefits to, can't refer patients to these doctors. So there's going to be a maintaining an independence of the pot docs from the cannabis industry. The licensees have to be at least 500 feet from schools, churches, libraries, playgrounds, and parks, but a locality could make that a greater distance if they chose to. Localities could only enact restrictions on time, place, and manner of medical marijuana establishments. Outright bans of dispensaries would require a majority vote of the people. And the Ohio legislature is banned from coming up with some sort of sneaky way to undermine the amendment. Now, that's MPP's initiative for medical marijuana in Ohio. They've got the funding. They've got the experience. They've passed several medical marijuana laws. This one is one of the better ones that they've put forth, and it would be the best medical marijuana law east of the Mississippi. They've hired three longtime local activists from Normal and the Ohio Rights Group and the former Issue 3 campaign from last year. They're proposing a law far better than what the Ohio legislature offered, which was a cannabidiol, no whole plant, no smoking medical marijuana proposal. So, of course, MPP's plan is terrible and must be dropped in favor of a competing grassroots initiative that promises to legalize medical marijuana the right way. Second verse, same as the first. Grassroots Ohio announced they are proposing their own amendment to legalize medical marijuana, which their spokesperson, Cassie Young, said is, quote, intentionally brief, end quote. This comports with the recent true legalization criticism of California's Adult Use of Marijuana Act as being too long at 62 pages. Quote, we shouldn't be putting regulations in our Constitution, she told Cleveland.com. The amendment is about protecting inherent rights of Ohioans, not enshrining business interests, end quote. Enshrining business interests. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, it was the boogeyman of the wrong people making money on marijuana reform that was the scare tactic that undermined the legalization campaign in Ohio last year, as well as that stupid mascot. So it's no surprise to learn that the mastermind behind the Grassroots Ohio one-page medical marijuana amendment was one of the most vocal critics of last year's Issue 3, GW Pharmaceuticals founder Don Wertschafter. Here's what his Grassroots Ohio initiative proposes. People the age of majority, which in Ohio is age 18, can use, possess, cultivate, process, and share cannabis for medical purposes. People under age 18 can use cannabis for medical purposes if a doctor says so. Everybody can grow, process, and sell industrial hemp, hydrocarbon extraction, edibles production, commercial cultivation, and retail sales may be taxed and regulated by the state. People age 21 and older can get licenses in the medical cannabis industry. You still can't endanger others, engage in malpractice, or operate heavy machinery while under the influence of cannabis, but evidence of active or inactive metabolites is not evidence of being under the influence of cannabis. And you still can't smoke in public places. That's it, folks. What condition qualifies you for using medical cannabis? Well, apparently, it's your belief that your cannabis is for medical use. The only requirement in this amendment for a physician's approval is for people under the age of 18. How much cannabis can you grow in your backyard for medical purposes? How much usable cannabis can you keep on hand? It doesn't say. Apparently, it's limitless. Those medical rights shall not be infringed, and active THC isn't evidence of impairment. So does that mean the 18-year-old who believes he needs cannabis for anxiety and is carrying a quarter pound of it while puffing a joint and driving is safe from any police interference? You know, the heart part of me loves this Grassroots Ohio initiative. No doctor's notes, age 18 and up, toking and driving is legal? What's not to love? But the head part of me says there's no way in hell Ohioans would vote for such a measure, especially after the easy attack ads it would summon. And the practical part of me says this is another case where a professional, national-funded, moderate reform initiative is getting primaried, once again, by true legalization.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
That's all the time we got for today. But stay tuned for Hour 2. Toker Talk Radio's up next. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. For everyone here in Astoria, Oregon, and CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.